In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
If you're anything like me, there have probably been times over the past couple of years as we've struggled with affordability that you've looked at your RRSP, maybe in a couple of different ways. First, can I even afford to contribute to this thing? Or is this money better spent on the daily costs of living? Or, second, I can't afford to live right now. Can I take money out of my RRSP so I can afford to fix my car, pay my mortgage, buy my groceries? We are told that contributing to RRSPs is one of the best things we can do to prepare ourselves for stability later in life. But when life is unstable now, we all have to make some choices. So today, we'll explore the good, the bad, and the ugly of managing our RRSPs. Enjoy.
Should I put my savings into an RRSP? How much?
If I put my money into an RRSP, do I pay less taxes?
What do I do if I want to use the money in my RRSP before I retire?
The deadline for filing your taxes is fast approaching. It's the end of this month. And you've probably heard a lot of talk about RRSPs. But how exactly do they work, and what is the best way for you to use them in this economy? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and you are listening to In This Economy, where we help you understand the systems that create your money problems. That's everything from grocery bills to mortgage renewals to RRSP contributions or withdrawals and everything in between. Now, this is an episode where we don't focus on a single listener's problem because we've gotten so many requests on different aspects of this topic and because I have my own questions too. So I mention this, but not to stress you out or anything, Canadian income taxes are due at the end of this month, and if you read your tax return closely, you'll notice that line 36 is the RRSP deduction line. I'm familiar with that line because for so many years, I had to write a zero in there, and I don't anymore. But it wasn't easy. Over the past few months, we have received a bunch of emails about RRSPs, people wondering if they can dip into their RRSPs to tide them over during a tight month, or wondering how much they should be contributing each year in order to retire comfortably. For all that and more, we went to Jackie Porter, who is a certified financial planner and an ambassador for FP Canada, a not-for-profit organization that aims to educate Canadians about their financial choices. We started out by asking her a basic question. What is an RRSP?
So RRSPs, registered retirement savings plans, are one and the same. So they are an opportunity for you to give the government a heads up that you're going to be contributing some funds for your retirement. And in doing so, you'll get some awesome tax credits and you'll have your money grow tax sheltered for as long as it's invested. And it's ideally should be invested till your retirement. It's just all about trying to make the most of growing your money in that tax sheltered environment.
I see. And maybe just put it on the record here, because I know this can confuse some people. When you put it into an RRSP, it is still your money and you can still withdraw it, right? It's just complicated and potentially comes with penalty.
Yes, the funds can be withdrawn. It still belongs to you. The heads up you're giving the government is your intention is to leave it for retirement. But, you know, life happens. Sometimes people need to take money out for different reasons. And depending on how you take it out, there might be penalties or there might be opportunities to withdraw it without having to pay taxes. It's really important that you look into those options and determine if it's still worth your while to withdraw it.
And we'll get into those options in a minute. But first, I mean, listen, this economy can be horrible for some people, but maybe let's start optimistically with a best case scenario. If everything is okay, how should RRSPs figure into the average person's, you know, annual financial plan and budget?
Yeah, I think people should consider an RRSP an opportunity for them to save for the long term. So how does it fit in? Ask yourself, if you're saving, let's talk about now. What's important for you in this moment? As you said, the economy is tough. So if you're thinking about, you know, all the things that have happened since in the last few years, grocery prices going up, inflation going up, interest rates going up, do you have debt? That would be the first thing. Are you paying debt on credit cards? Are you struggling to make those payments? Paying off debt should be your priority. Maybe you have a mortgage that might be coming up for renewal and you're concerned about, you know, paying that off. Those things are important. So prioritize paying off debt. Take that paycheck or the money that you have coming in and consider the money you have going out to say, you know, if something happened, would I have enough to cover my bills? So maybe you're someone worried about having full-time employment. Maybe you're concerned about the volatility, maybe in your job. I know a number of my clients who are in tech have gotten laid off. And it's all about why we're talking about what's coming in and what's going out and what it costs you to live and understanding what those costs are is having an emergency fund is really important. And so an emergency fund is basically your backup. If something comes up and you can't pay your bills for a month or a big bill comes out of nowhere, you've got that cushion. So that should be your second, like your second or first priority is how much debt do I have? I need to pay that off. That's going to, you know, really actually eat away at any opportunity I have to save in the future, the more debt I have. Do I have a cushion to pay for emergencies that might come up, a bill that comes out of nowhere, or if I get laid off? So building a 3 to 6 month cushion would be the second thing. And then the third thing would be putting money away for retirement or a home or something like that, a more longer term, maybe like a 5-year time horizon. I mention a home because there are opportunities to withdraw from the RRSP if you're buying a home. So it's something to consider for those of you out there who are thinking about how you'll save for a home. It is getting more and more challenging. Using the RRSP is a great way to do that. And then you'll be able to take it out without having to pay the tax and have all those penalties. And then you're able to also get some tax credits from the government based on how much you contribute.
So that was the best case scenario. You pay off your debt, you get yourself a nice little emergency cushion so that you can survive anything that comes up unexpectedly. And then you start contributing to your RRSP. Lots of people aren't in that situation and are looking at this or listening to this and thinking, like, I'm never going to be able to do those things. And retirement is a million years away. Should those people just forget about it for now?
Those kinds of circumstances are creeping up on more and more people feeling. I know a lot of millennials worry they'll never be able to buy a home. And, you know, debt is a concern and even budgeting is a concern. So I wouldn't write off saying that, you know, never will be the right time to make contributions to an RRSP. It's all about how much income you earn. Because keep in mind, the higher your income, the more taxes you pay, and the more money you just give away to the government if you don't make an RRSP contribution. There are also people who might be going to school, having to fund their education, and maybe you want to increase your income. So you're thinking, I'm going to take this program after, like maybe I'll take a part-time program to up my skills so I can earn more. And so RRSPs are opportunities that you can take money out. If you put money in an RRSP and take it out for something like an educational program. So I think consider your circumstances, how much income you earn, what you're trying to achieve to determine if RRSP still makes sense. It doesn't necessarily make sense for everybody. If you're trying to save for an emergency, an RSP is definitely not the best place to look at saving money. So think through what your circumstances are. Keep it on the radar. One last little thing I want to add about RSP is the younger you are when you grow money for the long term, the more powerful things like compound interest can be. So even if you're putting $25 away, because that's all you can afford to put away right now, don't underestimate the impact that money compounding, not for 10 years, not for 20 years, not for 30 years, and I'm talking right now to you young people, that's the power of compound interest. The more time money can compound and grow, the more money will be available. So you might not have cash on your side, but you have youth on your side and you have time compounding on your side, something that somebody who's even older trying to save does not.
That's really good advice. And if anybody's in this position now, whether they're, as you say, looking to put away 20, 25 bucks a month or a few hundred or more than that, what do you advise they look out for when they're deciding what kind of RRSP to start, where to start it, all of that stuff? I mean, especially if you're not versed in that world, it can seem really intimidating.
Yeah, I consider how soon you're going to need the money. Consider how you feel about losing money in the short term. And also consider, I mean, and these are now I'm talking to the cryptocurrency people in the room listening, right? I just say, how much do you understand of what you're investing in? Because sometimes not knowing and understanding an investment can really hurt you. So if you're someone who doesn't want to spend too much time or energy trying to figure out what should I do with my money, exchange traded funds, ETFs are great places to buy a diversified amount of investments, pay little fees, and kind of set it and forget it because you're buying the market and you're not trying to outguess the market.
So where do you go with that kind of stuff? You go to your local bank, you go to credit unions, like walk us through the process of deciding what RRSP to tackle.
Yeah, I think if you can find a financial planner or an investment advisor who is a broker who can offer basically a broad group of investments to choose from, and then walk through that process of thinking, you know, I'm thinking of using this investment in the next 1 to 2 years or 1 to 3 years for something. So I don't necessarily want to tie it up in anything too risky. Typically, an investment advisor or financial planner will do something called a risk tolerance questionnaire. Even if you set up one of those self-directed investments through any of those online brokerage firms. So there's a number of brokerage firms out there. If you're looking for online investments, you can Google online and set up an online investment account, or you can, you know, speak to a banker and ask to speak to an investment advisor who has access to brokered investments. So you don't have to be in one type of investment. And then the other option is to search. FP Canada has access to a diversified group of advisors that you can choose from, and you can select someone that specializes in investments. So it just kind of depends on what you're looking for, but the process is going to be the same. You're going to have to fill out something called an investor risk tolerance questionnaire. So the company you're working with understands how much you understand about the markets, how comfortable you are with risk, and when you'll need the funds.
Quick sidebar here. Jackie mentioned an organization called FP Canada just now, which offers financial literacy resources to Canadians.
I'm an ambassador for FP Canada, and it's an organization that represents financial planners who do something called independent financial plans. And so they are an organization that works with the public who are trying to understand how they can become more financially literate. And they offer financial planning services to basically Canadians.
FP Canada is a not-for-profit and they offer free 30-minute consultations. There's a link to them in our show notes in case you want to check them out and maybe you find their services useful. Okay, back to those RRSP contributions. So now we're up to the point where presumably, someone has made a decision about risk tolerance and where they're going to place their money. How much should you put in? When should you put it in? What are the kind of best practices for maximizing the value of what you're contributing?
So how much you should contribute? I mean, typically, a good rule of thumb is if you're in a position to save at least 10% of your and the amount that you earn towards long term, that's at least a great place to start. The other thing that you can do is just that even back of a napkin scenario where you're writing down all the income you have coming in and writing down all the expenses you have. There are lots of budget apps available these days that allow you to kind of see how much you actually have to work with. It's also a really good starting point to just figure out where you are financially and maybe things, if your priority is that you do want to save, where you can cut back to achieve the financial goals that you've set for yourself. So if you've never done that exercise, I encourage you to do that. And then really in terms of best practices, set up that 10% if you can. I highly recommend that people set it and forget it in terms of creating automatic monthly contributions to things so that they don't have to think every month, oh, how much should I save?
Right.
If they're automatically contributing, they're much more likely to achieve their goals and live on what they have left. So setting up a monthly contribution once you've figured out your budget, and then on a regular basis, challenging yourself to see if you can save more towards some of your financial goals, whether it be to putting it into your RSP or just saving overall. Challenge yourself as much as you possibly can, because it's always easy to just decide, I can't. And this is the things I see with clients. I have no idea how I can actually save for the things I need. And sometimes you might need assistance. And that's kind of where financial planning, FP Canada, the financial planning organization I talked about, comes in. We do offer, typically the advisors there will offer 30 minutes for people to get financial advice. Otherwise, check out, if you're someone who's motivated to do this on your own, check out those budget apps, those budget programs, even a spreadsheet, just so you know exactly where you stand. And then really push yourself to save as much as you can for the future. As somebody who's a little bit older, I can say the future comes sooner than you think.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Fast forward a little bit in our hypothetical. You've decided on your RRSP, you've started to put money into it, and all of a sudden, life happens. The last couple of years of the economy happens. Your mortgage needs to be renewed. You need to buy a new car, which is outrageous at this point in time. Can you take money out of your RRSP and explain exactly what happens when you do that?
So there's two programs you can take money out of your RRSP for. One is the Home Buyers Program, and you can take up to $35,000 under the Home Buyers Program out for a home purchase. You get 15 years to pay back that home buyer's loan. If you take money out for a pursuit of a 20-hour at least study program, you can take a money out of your RSP under the Lifelong Learning Program, and you've got 10 years to pay that back. And the maximum you can take is $10,000. So under those programs, you're able to take money out, have 10 years or 20, 15 years to pay it back. There's no penalty if you take it out under those programs. And then you have the ability to invest in the RSP and not worry that the money that you're saving, you won't be able to access.
Given the current housing market in this country, $35,000 seems so low.
I know. I 100% agree. They have come up with new programs over and above the Home Buyers Program that help. There is a program that just came out last year, and it's for new home buyers as well to access another, $10,000 a year. That's still only $45,000. I know it's not going to help if you're trying to buy a house in the GTA. It is a start, but I hear you. It's still relatively unaffordable for quite a few people to get into a home based on some of these programs that are out there. Having said that, if you are in a scenario where you put money in an RSP and you can't take it out because you need to take it out because life happens, then the option there is to withdraw it. And it all depends, folks, on how much you withdraw. So if you withdraw money outside of the RSP, in the RSP, over $5,000. So if you withdraw $4,999, you're okay.
Huh.
But if you borrow $4,999, you're just going to pay 10% withholding taxes on the money that you withdrew. If you take more than $5,000 or more, you're going to pay 20%. If you take over $10,000, you're going to pay 30%. And 30% is what you pay over $10,000 of withdrawals from your RSP. So the number is pretty, that like the withholding taxes, which is all the credits, by the way, that you would have received from the government. You pretty much lose the tax credits, the tax refund right. You got. And then the other part of it that you need to consider is all the money you withdrew is going to get added back to your income.
So you're going to be taxed on it again as income.
As income.
Wow.
So here's a hack, because I've had clients who they've gotten laid off. They weren't prepared. They took money out of their RSP, but they were confident that they'd be able to get a job the following year. Like, so what did they do? They took, you know, let's say they took $10,000 out of their RSP, but prior to the end of February, because they got a job, they were able to take a loan, an RSP loan, or they saved up some money, maybe borrowed somewhere else, and put that $10,000 back in so it wouldn't impact their tax circumstances. So it just kind of depends. I'm just giving you a hack in the event that life happens. But the bottom line is there are penalties associated with taking money out of the RSP. They're pretty hefty because you got to pay the tax refund back that the government gave you. And you're going to end up having that income added back to your income. So if you have no choice, you have no choice. So consider that when you make the RSP contribution. And then if you're able to, before the end of the tax RSP deadline, usually February 28th
right.
or March 1st, if you could put that money back into your RSP, then it won't impact you.
Have we seen over the past couple of years an uptick? Have you seen it in people unfortunately having to dip into their RSPs just for things like mortgages and groceries?
You know, thankfully I haven't, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. I do know overall Canadians are hurting more, unfortunately, and there's a lot of debt that they're carrying and also trying to pay bills because on top of that, inflation has gone up. So groceries, all these additional expenses have gone up for people. Gas has gone up. And so on top of that, they're carrying a pretty high debt load. And just unfortunately, their income hasn't necessarily kept up with any of this.
The reason I asked that question is because there might be some people who have a limited amount to save. You know, they're doing okay. They're struggling in this economy the way a lot of people are, but, you know, they're in that position where they have something to contribute and they know that it's a smart idea to do it. And they wonder if, given the fact that everything feels so precarious, they might be better instead putting that money in a tax-free savings account. Can you just quickly explain how people make those decisions and what the differences are, especially in terms of being able to react to changing circumstances?
Indeed. And yeah, I empathize because I, you know, get it. It's challenging out there for the reasons I've just said. Income has largely not kept up with the cost of everything. So if you're someone who is trying to decide, should I make an RSP contribution? Should I make a TFSA contribution? Consider, you know, do you have any concern about job security? Do you have an emergency fund that if you didn't have an emergency fund, if something happened, you'd be more likely to take that money out of an RSP and have to pay those awful penalties I've talked about? Because the big difference between an RSP and a TFSA is you don't have any tax to pay if you withdraw the money out of a TFSA. There's no penalty to pay. The only thing is you lose the ability for that money to compound and grow. But right. largely, the money goes into the TFSA. There's no tax. You don't get a tax refund. You don't get a tax credit. But the money grows tax-free, and it can be withdrawn tax-free. With RSPs, the money goes in, and you get a tax credit, but you withdraw it. You have to pay hefty penalties if you withdraw it, and you have to pay all of the taxes back. So you also have to have that income that you took out from the RSP. So whatever money whatever amount you took out from the RSP is going to also get added to your income. So none of those things happen in a TFSA, but you don't get the tax credit either. But you just kind of have to weigh, how badly do I need that money if something happens? Right. Do I have enough of a security blanket as far as money in an emergency fund? Do I earn enough income that it would make an RSP worthwhile? RSPs tend to be better for people earning at least, you know, late 50, so maybe 57, 58,000 or more. So if you're earning, you know, if you're kind of on the cusp, if you're earning 60,000 or less, you know, you might be on the cusp of whether or not it makes sense to make an RSP contribution, and it'd be worth it to have a conversation with a, you know, financial planner or an advisor to see if it's still something that you should consider. But consider your income tax bracket, because the people who benefit the most from RSPs are people in higher tax brackets. So for example, if you're someone who earns, you know, let's say the highest tax bracket, if you're in a 54% tax bracket, for every dollar you put in an RSP, you're getting 54 cents back. If you're someone who's in a lower tax bracket, so let's say you're someone who earns 60,000, you might only be getting closer to like 30 cents back. So you just kind of have to look at if it even makes sense for you, or would the money be better served where you can get at it without having to deal with penalties?
Okay, so here's my last question, and it's about the ultimate end game, which is retirement. What happens when you decide you're ready to retire and use that money? And, you know, retirement is kind of a nebulous term, you know? I could quote unquote retire, well, I can't afford to, but I would love to quote unquote retire in a few years. Could I still access my RRSP then? Would there be penalties? Do I have to wait till I hit a certain age or certain qualifications or what?
Retirement in this country at the moment means you can begin the process of taking money from your RSP, or what they call turning it into, instead of a registered retirement savings program, turning it into a registered retirement income fund. Don't know if you've heard that term before, RIF. So a RIF is basically when you make the decision to turn your registered retirement savings plan into a plan that's going to give you income. When you do that, what happens is the government looks at your age. Normally, you can start to RIF by as early as 55. You get a lower amount of income because the goal of the Registered Retirement Income Fund is to last you until you're at least 85.
So they're prorating it over how long they expect you to live.
Exactly, based on life expectancy. And so those numbers keep changing every year. But in a nutshell, you can start RIFing as early as 55, and you get a percentage based on your age, and it goes up each year based on your age. And then that income that you receive, that is the amount you'll pay taxes on when you file your income taxes. You won't have to pay that harsh withholding tax penalty, just the income tax penalty. How much did that income generate in taxes by the end of the year? And then that's the tax you'd be expected to pay when you file your taxes.
Do you recommend that people take it out right at 55? Does it make a difference? I mean, I'm assuming if you wait, obviously the individual payments are higher. And actually, here's my real question. What happens if you access it and you set up and start riffing at 55 and it's not enough and at 60, you need to go back to work and you unretire?
I can't emphasize enough why figuring out your retirement readiness and looking at how a financial plan can help you figure out how much you actually need to retire, and also figuring out, you know, when's the best time to start taking those RIF payments, because nothing's worse than outliving your savings. So one of the questions that a retirement plan or a financial plan seeks to answer is, will you outlive your retirement savings? And I think for people who are serious about their retirement, the most important thing is to make sure your plan is resilient, so you don't have that scenario where 5 years later, you didn't realize that you didn't have enough saved and you're going back to work. Nothing wrong with working, but it's always better to work because you want to, not because you have to.
And just to be clear, they won't stop your payments because you have to go back to work. There's no like technically you must stay retired thing here.
Not at all. It's really more about the longevity or the resilience of your asset. A retirement plan will say, well, how much will you need to live and how much will you be able to get out of your investments and how long will they last? So understanding that will give you a lot more confidence when you decide, okay, I'm ready to retire now because I know I have enough.
Jackie, thank you for this. I've learned a ton. I'm sure our listeners have too. And I will say I can think of one thing worse than outliving your investments.
What's that?
Dying.
Yeah, true. Well, you know, I always say it's either, you know, your investments die before you do. You dying before your investments, you know, not great, but at least you're dead and you don't have to worry about it.
Jackie Porter, a certified financial planner. Thank you so much to Jackie for sharing her expert knowledge with us. You can find more information about her services by visiting Ask Jackie, that's JACKIE.ca. And thanks to all of you who wrote in to suggest this topic. If you did, just know you were not alone, clearly. In this episode, we mentioned an organization called FP Canada. They are a nonprofit that helps Canadians with their financial planning. You can find out more about them at fpcanada.ca. Now, if you have a money problem, or even just a question about how finance works, about how the economy works, something you're wondering, we want to hear from you. You can email us at hello@itepod.ca. You can also call us and just talk. Go for as long as you want. Leave a voicemail. The number is 416-935-5935. We don't need your real name. We do need your real numbers, both financial and a phone number, so we can get in touch with you. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this show, if you want us to keep making this show, if you want more, please share and tell your friends to listen. You can also, if you're in the podcast world, like, rate, review, follow, whatever your favorite podcast app allows you to do, that will help more people see this show, listen to this show, and hopefully like this show. I'm your host and executive producer, Jordan Heath Rawlings. This episode was written and produced by Allison Broverman and Stephanie Phillips. The sound design was done by Ryan Clark. Mary Jubrin is our digital editor. Diana Kay is our manager of business development. Together, we make up the Frequency Podcast Network, which is a division of Rogers. Thanks again for listening. We will talk next week on In This Economy.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.